Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, how 4 years of Trump's presidency, COVID, and the Black Lives Matter movement have inspired a new generation of queer leaders to seek elected office in the Bay Area. And that was before Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died last Friday. My guest is Bay Area reporter, assistant editor, and political columnist Matthew Bajeko, who says a rainbow wave could be hitting our region's suburbs as more LGBTQ candidates than ever before are running outside of the Bay Area's biggest cities, San Francisco, Oakland, and San Jose. Since the loss of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg to cancer last Friday night, attention on the presidency and other federal races on November 3rd ballots, especially the U.S. Senate, has intensified. We'll be looking at those races in the near future. But on this week's episode, the record number of LGBTQ people seeking local and statewide office this November demands our attention for many reasons that my guest will detail. Matthew Bajeko has been covering political and other news for the Bay Area Reporter, the region's largest LGBTQ-focused newspaper and online news service, for 19 years. Matthew, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thanks for having me.
So, Matthew, you've written recently about the record number of queer people running for statewide and local offices in the SF Bay region's smaller cities and towns. How much has that number grown, and what do you see as the main reasons for that?
Well, this year alone on the November ballot, there are over 50 LGBTQ candidates running for everything from water district board to school boards to transit agency boards, the state senate and assembly seats. It's quite phenomenal to think that about 8 years ago, I was writing stories about people concerned that we wouldn't have enough of a farm team, i.e. a local bench of out candidates to run for the state legislature. And there was concerns that the LGBT affinity group for out lawmakers in the legislature could dwindle down to as many as only two people, which really isn't enough for a caucus. And then the thing that I've found particularly of interest this year is a lot of these candidates skew young. We're seeing people in their early 20s running, and some of them are going to be the youngest people ever elected to their city council or school board if they win. And a lot of them, as I've been reporting on this over the summer, have told me they've been inspired, you know, particularly by what they've witnessed during the 4 years of the Trump administration, you know, working diligently to roll back as many LGBT rules, regulations, and rights that the community has gained over the years. They were further motivated in the summer when the Black Lives Matter protests erupted following Pride Month over the, you know, police killings of Black Americans all across the country. And they also are motivated by the fact that in a lot of their cities, they have moved now from having citywide council races to district-based races, and that makes it a lot easier for people to run. They don't need as much money to mount a campaign, and some of these districts only have like 2,000 or 3,000 voters in them, so it doesn't take a lot to win. And a lot of these councils, it's, you know, majority white, elder people. So we could see a real change in the makeup of, you know, elected officials all over the Bay Area after November 3rd.
Now, you said that a lot of these, it was a lot more young candidates. And is that also helping bring out young voters? Because there's been a lot of hand-wringing in the past, you know, decade or two about young people not turning out to the polls, especially.
Well, we'll see if they vote. But the sense I'm getting is that they are primed to vote for everything that I just mentioned and more. And that, you know, they are, a lot of them are now home, living with their parents. They're, you know, looking for jobs if they just graduated from college, which during COVID is, you know, real difficulty. So they have a lot of time on their hands to protest, to run for office, to get active and help others win their races. Because the other phenomenon that I've chronicled in the BAR in the last couple of weeks is that in San Mateo and Santa Clara County, we have revitalized LGBT Democratic clubs that have formed to not only, you know, bring their LGBTQ community together in those counties, because they don't have as a focal point as, say, Alameda does or San Francisco does, but also to get people elected in their counties. Because right now, San Jose does not have anyone from the LGBT community on its city council, and there is no representation anymore on the county board of supervisors. And for a county and a city like that not to have that type of representation is problematic. And I think people down there have you know, they've known this for a while, and they laid the groundwork a couple of years ago to relaunch this Democratic club to help elect people who can, you know, maybe right now there aren't any candidates either running for city council in San Jose this year, or for the Board of Supervisors, but they're looking at down the line, like 4 years from now, to have some of these people elected to the city councils or the school boards down there who could potentially run for, you know, San Jose City Council or the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors.
Okay, very good. I do want to definitely talk some more about the clubs in a few minutes. Curious to know, though, you mentioned that, you know, young people are getting more involved, and you're seeing that in the Bay Area especially. Do you have any sense of whether that's happening across the country?
In terms of LGBTQ candidates, certainly. I think there are a lot of younger people who have been winning their primaries this year. And we saw this begin back in 2018, where during the midterm elections, there was a big blue wave, and in that blue wave of Democrats winning seats all over the place, there were also a record number of LGBTQ candidates who ran and then won. And then this year alone, the Victory Fund, which is the national organization that helps train LGBTQ people to run for office and then will endorse them and help funnel money to their campaigns through their donor network, they're on track to endorse over 300, maybe 400 candidates. And I think, it's always hard to tell exact numbers because these candidates aren't tracked as well. And some candidates are not as out as others. But I'd say that we're probably at least up to 700 LGBTQ candidates running across the country this year. And I think that number is just going to continue to increase as a younger generation who's not grown up in the closet, you know, they've been out for almost their entire lives. And so it's not as big of a deal for them to go from leading their, you know, school or community youth groups to run for office as out people.
So with so much focus now on the U.S. Supreme Court and so much worry and fear among LGBTQ people about the prospect of a much more solidly conservative high court likely to limit or even scale back queer rights and women's and immigrants' rights, too, for that matter, today, just a few threatened constituency. Why should we also care right now about local representation, city council, school boards, county and state seats?
It's all about building that farm team that has the experience and the record to run for higher offices. So every election matters. The person you could be electing today to your city council could one day be running for president. You don't know. And certainly people, you know, having control of the House and the Senate is important, not only to get, you know, LGBTQ legislation to the White House for the president to sign, but in particular, as we're now seeing with the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who controls the Senate gets to control who gets her seat. And right now it's the Republicans, and they have the votes and the wherewithal likely to fill that seat before the next administration is sworn in January. And so, you know, I hear people say, well, I don't really vote, or I only vote for president because nothing else matters. And every single vote can have an impact on your life, whether you recognize that fact or not.
The phrase, all politics is local, has been a common phrase for a long time. And House Speaker Tip O'Neill, who was House Speaker for 10 years from 1977 to 1987 and served in Congress for 34 years in all, he's famous for using that phrase, but it actually goes back to an Associated Press Washington bureau chief back in 1932. But anyway, the point is that, you know, hit the principle is that a politician's success is directly tied to his or her ability to understand and influence the issues of his constituents. You know, there's a notion that people want to send a message to people higher up, but really they're focused on issues that matter to them on a day-to-day basis. So let's get down to a few grassroots examples of local, of some of these local contests. You've written about a gay Tracy city councilman who's running for mayor, a Santa Clara County school board candidate. And actually there's a couple that have been, or they're going to be appointed because they had no opposition. Start wherever you'd like to. If there's a particular one or two or three you want to point out or illustrative of what's going on.
Sure. So I think there are two gay black men who lucked out and don't have any opposition at all. And they both, it turns out, will be on the ballot, but all they have to do is vote for themselves and they win at this point.
Right.
Okay. And so one of them is Devin Murphy, who grew up in San Francisco and now lives in Pinole in the East Bay. And so he will be the first out person of color to serve on the Pinole City Council and the second gay man, because a gay man won several years ago to that council. He ran and was elected. And then down in Redwood City, that's one of the cities that this year is instituting district elections. And in their newly created District 4 seat, a man named Michael Smith, who's also gay and black, he is the only one running for that. And he argued to his city that he should be on the ballot because this is the first time they're doing the district elections. And so just to get voters to realize that and to realize that they are in this district and they will now have a district council person representing them for the first time, so that they know who it is, right? So when they get their ballot, they'll see both of these guys' names on there in their various cities. We also, ironically, there's a lesbian woman who's on the BART board, Rebecca Saltzman, and there was some talk that perhaps she might not run for re-election this year because she and her wife last fall had their first child. She's already served two terms on the BART board. And she actually decided, you know, I'm going to stick around for at least another term. And nobody else decided to run against her. So she's assured to be there. And then I also love this, Cesar Zapata of Richmond. He's run several times to be on his city council and didn't win. And he was appointed to the West County Wastewater District Board. And nobody decided to run against him. So he's automatically going to be on there. And this is just one of those examples where endurance sometimes in politics works to your favor. And that even though he didn't win his council race, he still remained involved in his city. He was active in the Lambda Democratic Club of Contra Costa County. He helped get that going and served as its president for a couple terms and was active in his neighborhood. And so when this vacancy came up, he was one of the people that, you know, this guy, he probably will do a good job. He got it. And he can use this now as a way to run for higher office, whether he wants to run for city council again or maybe the assembly district seat that he lives in, you know, if the incumbent terms out, you know, this is a position that he can use as a jumping off board to get his name out there, meet people, and then, you know, seek another office down the road.
And of course, this is a tactic that's used by many people across the political spectrum. I know that the religious right use this over the years to, it's like, hey, if we can get on the school boards, then we can get onto other a local elected office, and then we move on up from there. And that's when they started really influencing politics, 10 or 20 years ago. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen, speaking with Matthew Pacheco, assistant editor and politics columnist for the Bay Area Reporter, Northern California's largest circulation LGBTQ newspaper and online news service. Been covering the LGBTQ community since 1971, which is coming up on half a century next year.
Hopefully we will survive the pandemic to celebrate that.
Yes, it's a tough time for a lot of newspapers. We'll save that for another discussion. Do you have another local example? I mentioned, I think, briefly in passing, Santa Clara County School Board candidate Quetzal Gomez. Is there anything you want to say about her or about the importance of school boards, perhaps, in general?
Yeah, well, she's a queer candidate, a woman of color running down there in Santa Clara County. And once again, school boards, as you said, can be jumping off points to run for higher office. And there's a lot of issues that go on in the schools that impact LGBTQ students, from having, mental health services and the support if they come out and they're rejected by their family. And also to ensure that the schools are teaching the required curriculum on LGBT history that, state lawmakers require them to do. So there's a lot of issues there that maybe people don't think about, but that are really important. A couple other examples, though, of kind of historic candidates this year is we have three non-binary candidates in the Bay Area. And according to the Victory Fund, currently there are only two non-binary people who hold office. They both happen to be council members in the state of New York. Once again, one of them is running for a district council seat in San Ramon. A young 21-year-old Indian American named Samira Rajwade. And there's also running in Redwood City for a newly created district. Their name is Lizette Espinoza Garnica. I'm probably not saying that right, and I apologize. And they not only are non-binary, but they're a Chicanx young candidate at the age of 24. And then down in Santa Clara County, there's a non-binary school, community college trustee candidate named Allie Saperman, who recently was endorsed by the gay Stonewall Club down there. And we also could see a trans candidate be elected as well. Trans candidates have not done very well in the Bay Area in the past. Several have won. The only one who's really won is Judge Victoria Kolakowski, who happens to be the wife of my editor at the paper over in Alameda County. And this year, a transit activist named Victoria Fierce, who's queer and trans, is running for the AC Transit Board's at-large seat. So if they win, that could be a historic candidacy there. And also, down in the South Bay, we have Alex Lee, who is on track to become the very first bisexual person to serve in the state legislature. They're running in the 25th Assembly District that includes parts of Alameda and Santa Clara counties. It's a very Democratic district, so they're almost assured of defeating their Republican candidate and being sworn in to the seat come December, which will be historic because... once again, right currently in the legislature, we only have gay men and lesbians serving, and we've never had either a bi or a trans state lawmaker here in California.
I have a feeling there must have been a bisexual lawmaker before, but just not out.
Right.
So, you mentioned political clubs. Let's spend a few minutes on that. There's been some growth, some reinvigoration of LGBTQ political clubs, mostly Democratic clubs, I assume, and any Republican queer political clubs?
Yeah, so there's a Log Cabin Republican Club here in San Francisco, and they're pretty active around the Bay Area, supporting Republican candidates that they like. And so whatever your political persuasion is, and there is a club now in your county that you could join. And the Log Cabin Club in San Francisco is open to anyone who's a Republican and can, you know, doesn't really, you don't have to live in San Francisco to join that club if you want to.
Okay, but are the Democratic queer political clubs, are they the ones that are growing the most or being reinvigorated?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So just because of our demographics here in the Bay Area, we're a very liberal region. Right now in our legislative delegation no longer has any Republicans in it. It's all Democrats. And so, you know, that's why I think the Democratic clubs, you know, are growing and becoming more of a force in their counties.
So there's I think you mentioned a Stonewall Club in San Mateo County. Is it a similar name in Santa Clara County?
Yeah, so there's Stonewall Clubs in San Mateo and Santa Clara counties now. And there's also the East Bay Stonewall, which does Alameda County, and they've been around the longest. And then the club in Contra Costa County is called the Lambda Democratic Club. And then, of course, here in San Francisco, we have the Alice B. Toklas and the Harvey Milk Democratic Clubs, with the Harvey Milk Club historically being the more progressive left-leaning of the two.
So let's talk just a minute or so about getting out the vote. Local elections have usually been the ones that don't inspire a lot of voter turnout. This obviously November, everybody knows it's a presidential election. No question about that. But and that is, has the federal election for president and the Senate and the House seem more important this year than any year I can remember, at least since I turned voting age in 1975, which I hate to say, wow, 45 years. Huh. What do you know about how voter turnout has been generally over the past, 5 or 10 years? And there have been some people are saying this year is going to be a huge turnout. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, we already saw a record turnout in the March primary. We already are at a record voter registration throughout California. So I think that you're going to see a record turnout come November. And that's why, particularly with COVID and mail-in balloting, it's going to be really critical for people to get their ballots in as early as they feel comfortable doing so. My husband and I have a tradition of going to our local polling place the morning of election day and voting. And he already told me, as soon as we get our mail-in ballots this year, we're going to vote. And he's thinking we may even just go and drop it off at a drop-off site and not even worry about putting it in the mail. But the key thing to think about here is, you know, there's been so much talk on how long is it going to take for them to call these races. It's not going to be on election night, right? But the sooner you get your ballot in, the sooner it gets counted. So the longer you wait, the longer we're all going to be waiting to find out who won some of these races. So highly recommend to vote early. And not okay. Often, multiple times, as our president is telling people.
Vote early, but don't vote often, just once. But vote. I think we're all saying that this year, vote. There seems to be a really, I can't believe how many friends I have who have been telling me that they've been writing letters and postcards and calling or texting voters in other states and swing states. Have you ever seen this amount of energy being focused on that as this year?
Oh, yeah. Back in 2018. So the problem for a lot of Democrats here in the Bay Area is we don't have contested races for House seats. It's very rare to see contested House races here in the Bay Area because incumbents of either party are usually just reelected. People like them. So people are always like, well, what can I do? Because there's nothing for me to really work on here. So different groups over the years have formed some marshal people to here in the Bay Area to take them out to the Central Valley or even to Nevada. People will also, you know, fly to some of the red states to purple districts to help candidates out there. And in 2018, the local party under the leadership of David Campos, a gay man who used to be a supervisor and House Speaker at the time, Nancy Pelosi, they opened the center in La Castro where people could go and volunteer and call into these districts in Southern California, the Central Valley. They expanded it because the party was doing so well to other districts across the country to talk to people about Democrats running in their House district and why they should vote for them. So I've already been seeing groups, even under COVID, doing that again. And they're focusing even more this year on writing letters, making phone calls, because in-person canvassing and campaigning is really not possible right now.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to bring up before we run out of time as to why this election also is super important is it is a census year. So if you haven't filled out your census, you need to do that by the end of September, because tens of thousands of dollars in federal funding comes to your city based on how many people filled out the census, right? But the other thing that's so critical this year for people to vote all over the country is the people you elect to your state legislatures and governor decide the boundaries for the House seats. So it's this critical, often kind of overlooked thing in the public's eye. 10 years ago, the Republican Party really focused their energy on winning state houses so that they could control the boundaries and increase their numbers in the House so that they could control a lot of what goes on in DC. And really, it's an imbalance, because if you look at the votes, I mean, there should be more Democrats in the House just because the Democrats get more votes on a national level. But when you control who lives in the district, you can carve out these safe seats for your own party. And even though your state is, you know, say tilting Democrat, if the Republicans control who goes to the Congress, they can make it imbalance there.
So vote and fill out the census forms.
Exactly.
And encourage anybody you know who hasn't done so to do so. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio from San Francisco. I want to thank my guest, Matthew Pacheco, political columnist and assistant editor for the Bay Area Reporter. Thank you so much, Matthew.
Thank you, Eric.
Out in the Bay is available on our website, outinthebay.org, and on Apple, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. You can subscribe to the podcasts and to our email newsletter on our site, outinthebay.org. We'd love to hear from you, too, so please send us an email, outinthebaysf@gmail.com, or leave a comment on our site or via Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @OutInTheBaySF. And follow us and share, please. Building our numbers could help us secure funding. I want to thank my co-producers, Truk Nguyen and Kendra Klang. Hey, would you like to join our team? There are many ways we could use your talents in audio production, social media, program distribution, fundraising, and more. Let us know how you might be able to help. If things go well, volunteer help could become paid. If you're interested, please write to us, outinthebaysf@gmail.com. That's outinthebaysf@gmail.com. You may know, if you've been listening for a while, that Comcast California generously funded our summer relaunch, and we're so grateful. But these 10 weeks have passed, and now we need listener support to help sustain our service. We know it's a challenging time for many, but if you find value in what we do and can afford to chip in, please consider a gift of any size. Just click the donate button on our website, outinthebay.org. That's outinthebay.org. We thank you so much. I'm Eric Jansen. Thank you for joining us out in the Bay.